Hey, this is Kaylee Moore.
And this is Paul Jarvis.
Welcome to the Creative Class Podcast.
A podcast for freelancers.
Woohoo!
Yay! This season is sponsored by our friends at Flywheel, who've hosted our Creative Class website for years.
They're who we trust for reliable service and top-notch customer support.
They also take care of everything, from security to nightly backups to free demo sites.
Check out getflywheel.com/friends/cc and use the code CCPODCAST to get 50% off your first month of any plan.
Hooray.
So first up, we're going to talk about a topic that I'm really excited about. And this one is all about privacy and how much do you share online. And for you and I, we both, I think, have, I guess, internet personas, which feels really weird to say. But for you and me, they're both very close to who we are in real life. And so what I want to talk about is like, how do you set boundaries for what you share online? And basically, how far do you go when it comes to the information that maybe people ask for? Or even just like, how do you determine what's private and what you share with the people that you interact with online, or your mailing list, or the things that you blog about? All kinds of topics. We can go a lot of directions with this.
We can.
I want you to start. Like, I want to just really dive into this. And let's start with, where's the line between personal and business as far as sharing online goes?
Yeah. And I think this is something that, it's so fun. Like 10 years ago, I don't think any freelancer would think about this. Right? Like, it's such a new thing that we all kind of exist on the internet. And for me, I feel like if I'm going to talk about something online, I want to be as open and transparent about it. So I'm only going to bring up things that I know that I'm comfortable being open and transparent about. So for me, it's like business. Anything anybody could possibly want to know about, like, Paul Jarvis and his business is fair game. Right? Like, if anything business related, I'm going to write about, I'm going to tweet about, I don't use any other social platforms, but I could put like Pinterest pins about it. But I feel like that for me is the line. And like, I do share a tiny bit of personal, but like very vaguely and very rarely. Like, I think I posted a picture of a print that we got done up for our pet Lincoln, who passed away, guess 2 months ago. But like, that's about it. And like, maybe I'll talk about gardening once or twice. And it's funny, when I tell people this, they're like, I don't understand. But like, I'm a super private person. I don't want to talk about my life on the internet, because I don't want that out there. It's not like I have anything to hide. But, and this is a good way that I kind of like to think about privacy, because I spend a lot of time thinking about privacy. I've gone down this rabbit hole a lot. Is that I think that there's a difference between wanting to be private and having something to hide. And I think the easiest way to think about it is that we want to go to the bathroom with the door closed. Like, we don't have anything to hide. We all have to go to the bathroom. But like, there's some things that we just don't want shared in public. Mm-hmm. Right? And to me, it's like, I can't remember who even wrote that. But I read that and I'm like, it's such a weird way to describe it, but it makes perfect sense. What about you? What's kind of the line between personal and business in terms of sharing?
Yeah, I feel like maybe I'm a little bit more open, especially when it comes to Twitter and Instagram. I think I do a lot of sharing and talking about things from my day-to-day life, or maybe even a little bit of like my relationship or what I'm watching right now, or hobbies and stuff like that. So I do tend to share a little bit more personal anecdote type things, because I feel like it's what I enjoy seeing from other people. So I find myself doing it. I don't know if it's, you know, imitation is the most sincere form of flattery, but maybe it's a little bit of that. And so I enjoy it. So I find myself doing it as well. And I feel like I do still have pretty strong boundaries around what's off limits. And I think maybe that's a big secret to handling this and like really feeling control over your online persona or whatever, you know, what you share with the internet. And so for me, my boundaries are around things like, I don't really talk about how much money I make. I don't really talk about the specifics of like my family, or like, I don't get really political online. I don't talk about those things a lot of the time. So, I mean, I feel like for me, there's some fairly black and white boundaries around what I will and won't share. But as far as just you know, general personal preferences and kind of anecdotal stuff, that stuff I'm okay with sharing because I feel like it's a relationship builder with the people that I want to talk to online. And again, like that's different for me. I'm somebody who really craves an online connection and an online community because I don't have a lot of that in my real life and I find myself missing it. And so I participate in conversations and share things much in the way I would with a group of friends in real life. So saying that out loud sounds really sad to me and a little depressing, but I cherish those internet friendships that I have and my internet friends. I like sharing those personal things. So yeah, it's different for everyone.
I think that's just the way that it works now. Like, I think that's one of, like, I come down pretty harshly about the way the internet works now in my writing a lot, but mm-hmm. I do actually think that that's probably the best thing about the internet is that people can connect with like-minded people or people that they're interested in having conversations with regardless of their geographic location. Mm-hmm. Like, I live in the woods on an island. Like, there's not that many entrepreneurs or freelancers or whatever around here. There's just not. But like, I can hop on a Skype call with you or other people like that, and they can be anywhere in the world.
Right.
And that to me, I think is kind of the value. So I don't think it's sad at all. I just think that it's even better.
It is.
That you have the ability to do that.
Yeah, and it's a reality too. I mean, you got to make it work. If you live somewhere that's remote, like where you live, or very rural, like where I live, you find ways to navigate around the gaps that you have in your freelance career or in your life. And that's one of the ways I do it.
I do want to talk about this because you brought it up, like boundaries and what you share and with whom. But you did kind of mention internet self versus real self. Mm-hmm. So, is there a difference for you? Like, is there an internet Kaylee or and a real Kaylee? And are they different in some way? Are they different in a way that you're okay to share? I don't know if this is private.
No. I think they're pretty much the same. Like, I don't really have a persona. I don't have like a shtick on my website or anything. Like, I don't claim to be anything other than what I really am, just me. And so, yeah, it's not a big leap. I think that I tend to be a little bit more positive online than I am maybe in real life because I'm projecting the version of myself that I want to be, if I'm being totally candid. But yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty close. What about you?
I'm the opposite. I think I'm more negative. I think my online brand is more negative than I am in real life, which
That's
I think
funny.
Is hilarious. It's true though. Like think about it. Like I was just going on about socks yesterday. I think for people that know me, they understand that that's like my humor. Like when I get mad at things on Twitter, I'm not actually mad. It's just funny. Like that's how I express humor. And humor is very difficult to do in 140 or 280 sorry characters.
That's so true.
I do think for me, it's real and authentic, but there is a difference for me. And it's funny, because I was doing an interview with somebody and it came up that I was an introvert. And he's like, you're not an introvert. Like, we're having a great conversation and like, you're super lively and energetic. And I wanted to say like, and I don't even know how to explain it properly, but like, when I'm doing things in public on the internet, I have way more energy because I know that that's what's helps people understand things or like, that's what like I'm bad at communicating in big groups or in person a lot of the times, but online, because you get stronger in the muscles that you work, like this is what I do all day. So like I definitely come across as more extroverted or more outgoing online. But like if I was at like a dinner party, I'd be the person who has the least amount to say other than like, yes, no, pass the potatoes. But it's still me. Like when I am expressing myself, it's very much the same me, but I do think that in real life, I'm a lot more internalized and online, I'm a lot more external just because by virtue of what I do, I have to communicate.
Yep.
So the difference for me isn't like a difference in personality, it's just like a difference in like kind of volume, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah, environment changes things. I think that's true for me too.
Yeah.
I think that's a really important distinction too. So let me ask you this then. So what about when people ask for you to cross the line of your boundary? So how do you handle that? How do you navigate those situations and kind of tactfully circumvent them when those conversations come up?
Yeah, people want my address all the time and not for nefarious reasons. Well, probably not for nefarious reasons. They just want to send me stuff.
Well, that's cool.
I think it's cool. Our sponsor Flywheel sent me this like big gift pack of swag that my wife loves this like ceramic camping mug that she has commandeered for her tea mug. that I don't get to use anymore. They should have said two. But like, it's a great example. Like, people ask for my address. And like, because we both use a newsletter to communicate with our audiences, we legally have to put an address in the footer of that email.
Right.
And thousands of people can see that. And so I have a P.O. box. And this is how far down the route. Like, I have a P.O. box in a different city. Because where I live is small enough that I'm like, and I'm sure somebody could probably figure it out. Don't figure it out. But like, it's just... It's just that, like, I would rather not share my home address with people. Even on invoices, I use my P.O. box. Even for government stuff, I either use my lawyer's address because, like, there's public record, at least in Canada, when you search for corporations, there's like public record stuff. And I'm like, I'm always wary of, like, is there anything in public that has personal information that I wouldn't be okay for anybody on the internet to see?
Right.
And so I'm always thinking about, like, when I register a domain name, I think about, like, okay, as somebody who is this, like, what record are they going to see? So things like that, things like phone number, things like home address, things like that, I don't really feel comfortable sharing those things. Not because I think anything bad is going to happen, but I just, like, I'm a private person. Like, I just like to have that level of privacy. And so, yeah, I go out of my way to do those things. But to me, it's worth it. What about you for that?
Yeah, I use a P.O. box too. And I think mine is less out of concern over, I don't know, just sharing my address in general. And you're right. In some government forms, I am required to use a different address because a P.O. box isn't accepted. But I think for me, it's out of a concern that, I don't know, maybe it's just me being honest with myself that there are definitely some creepy people out there who will do very weird things. And so I just feel safer using a P.O. box because, again, it's a buffer. You know, it's a protective, I don't know, it's a layer of privacy that I appreciate. And so, yeah, I'm on team P.O. box.
I've got some weird things in my P.O. box as
well. Like, what's the weirdest thing you ever got?
Somebody found a plastic rat on the street in Portland, picked it up. I think is weird because it's just like on the street somewhere downtown Portland and mailed it to me.
Okay.
Because they're like, oh, Paul likes rats. I know his address because I'm on his mailing list and I'm going to send it. And I was like, on one hand, this is like pretty neat that I have built a brand where people see rats and think of me. Like, that's kind of neat. But also, it's like, that's just weird.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
Like, the intention was fine. The intention was 100% fine. But it also, like, to get a big box in the mail and be like, what is this? And open it and see like a life-size plastic rat in it. I'm like, this is just my life, I guess.
I guess so.
Yeah.
That's a little strange.
Yeah.
Freelancing is hard enough. So why not let someone else take care of hosting for your clients?
That's why Flywheel created a simple platform that makes it a breeze to build WordPress sites, collaborate with clients, and seamlessly offload the finished product, all from the same place. Trust us. With a WordPress solution this smooth, you'll have tons of time to book new freelance business.
So why do we think Flywheel is the best WordPress hosting for clients?
Well, those free demo sites are pretty awesome. That way you don't have to pay until you go live.
They also have easy to transfer billing to a client once you've finished up the project, or you can get them to pay right from the start while you set things up.
So never worry about a client calling you at 2 a.m. because their site is down. Flywheel has servers around the world and tech on standby 24/7. They even back your websites up nightly and will clean up your WordPress site if it gets hacked.
Check out getflywheel.com/friends/CC and use the code CCPODCAST to snag 50% off your first month of any plan. So what about like on social media? What do you do in those situations when somebody asks for information that you don't feel comfortable sharing?
Nope.
Just a nope?
Yeah, I mean, it's really just that. It's funny too, because like, I guess I have strong rules about the things that we talked about, but the contact page on my website just says pretend I'm dead. But like, if somebody wants to get in touch with me, I'll tweet my email address like in an at, not a DM to people, because it's like, whatever. So many people have my email address because it's the email address I use for my mailing list. It's like, whatever, it's okay if that's out there. But really, I don't have my email address on my website because I just get pitched too many things that are totally irrelevant to me. Like, people think I'm a tech journalist and I'm not. We talked about this. The only reason I have for tech publications is to further my own endeavors. is not to report on news.
Right.
So I keep that kind of thing off. What about you? If somebody attempts to cross a boundary that you set for yourself in terms of privacy, how do you handle that?
Usually it's kind of the same. I just kind of disappear, or I don't respond, or usually not engaging is the best way to just get around it. Because that's the thing, like, you don't owe anything to anybody when it comes to the internet. Even really when it comes to the client relationships, like if there are things that you have black and white that you don't share and they're asking you to change that, if that's part of your process and it's built into your business, or it's even just a, you know, part of your personality that is a defining characteristic, and you're not, you know, to break that and to change that, or to share something you're not comfortable sharing would be like a major, major, I don't know, like a break from process, I guess. I feel like, you know, why? You have to really ask yourself why, because you don't owe somebody that, one, the time to respond, or two, the information if you're not comfortable sharing it and if they don't absolutely, absolutely need it.
Do you ever give clients your phone number?
I do sometimes. I prefer to use something like a Zoom call or a Zencastr or Skype to have that instead, so I don't have to give out the personal number. That's always my first preference.
Yeah, I was going to say, you put a caveat on it. Like,
right.
Don't just call me anytime.
Right.
Like when I was doing client work, I was always the same. It was like, if you do need to talk, like, email me and let's set something up. We'll get something on the calendar soon. If I'm working with them, if it's an active client, then let's talk today or tomorrow. But it's kind of building that, like, you can't just reach out and expect me to like hop on a call. I'm working. Mm-hmm. And typically I'm working on your stuff. And if I'm not interrupted, I'll do better work and get it done faster. So let's schedule something.
Yeah.
And so that was always kind of the pushback for me, was like, you don't need my phone number, because email me and we'll set up like a Zoom or a Skype or Hangouts or like whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think that you and I are pretty good at this. I think like drawing that line and having boundaries and being able to easily explain them to the people that need an explanation, and just like not explaining them to people who don't, like some dude on Twitter doesn't need your phone number or my address. Like, it just doesn't matter. But like, if we're working with somebody, then it's like, yeah, we can give them a reason for that. But I think that you're good at tactfully circumventing that, because we shouldn't have to apologize for saying, sorry, you can't have my phone number. Sorry, you can't have my mailing address. It's like, they don't need an apology. It's just like, why do you need this? I think that was one of the best things was you said, if it's a break from process, then why do it? The process is where, like, you and I are both big process oriented people. So like, there's a process in place for a reason. Like, if we do need to talk, like, we'll have a weekly meeting, or we'll get something on the books. And I think doing it in that way just makes it easier to manage.
Yeah. You know, and I did this wrong early in my freelance career, where I gave out my phone number to a potential client, and there was 100 red flags already that I should have just been like, this is a terrible idea to work with this person. But I gave out my phone number, and it was a Friday at 5 p.m. and he started texting me. Ugh. And he wanted me to sign off on a proposal and commit to the next phase of the process. And he just kept texting me, calling me, left me a voicemail. And eventually I was just like, you know what? I can't work with you anymore. Like, I had to fire him on the Friday night because he just wouldn't stop. Mm-hmm. And he gave me this big, long scolding email about how that was so unprofessional of me and I should have committed to the project. And he didn't understand why I wouldn't just follow through when we had already had all these discussions. And it was just like, oh my goodness. Like, that was so illustrative to me, I think, of what can go wrong when you don't have those boundaries in place, and when you share your phone number or you make yourself too available, especially in a client situation.
Sounds like it would have been a great client, though.
Nightmare.
Jesus. New phone, who dis?
Yes, I should have done that. I should have just thrown my phone in a river and started over.
But I mean, like, that's like, you are being professional by not engaging in something like that. And I think this is why we advocate so heavily on like having communication before there's money involved, is that like, if somebody's communication style is so different from the way that you want to operate and the way that you run your business and the boundaries that you have, then it's not a good fit. Like, it sucks that happened, but it's so good that happened before you both had like a contract signed.
That's right.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it was a nightmare. Okay, so let's shift this a little bit then. Let's talk about, how does this factor into when you're selecting software? You know, how do privacy policies impact this whole conversation? Like, how do you evaluate the tools that you use for your business as far as privacy goes and information sharing?
Yeah, and I think this is important because it matters. Like, I got an email from, I can't remember what hotel chain, Westin, Marriott, something like that, that they had a data breach. And because when you pay for a hotel room, you give a credit card and you give a mailing address, it's like, well, hackers have that. Like, who knows if they'll do anything with it? I don't think they got the credit card. I think they just got like mailing address. But it's like every time you agree to use a service or agree to terms or put data on somebody else's servers through software, then you are giving them the ability to have that data. And if anything bad ever happens to that data, then it's that data that's on the hook, which is why I've been writing a lot about encryption and privacy. And I think a good example of this is like the service Dropbox versus the service Sync. I think sync.com, it doesn't matter. They're not a sponsor. But Dropbox doesn't encrypt data end to end. So they don't have E2EE encryption, which means that Dropbox is secure and you can have two-factor authentication and all of that. But like, if their servers ever got hacked, then everybody's information that's on there, every single file you've uploaded is available. Any employee at Dropbox can go in and look at your files. I mean, that could help with support, but do you have anything that you wouldn't ever want people to see? Like, are there any files that are like you going to the bathroom with the door open? I'm going to keep bringing that up because it's such such a fun visual. But I think that whereas a service like Sync, or there's a gazillion, it doesn't even have to be that one, that encrypt the data on your end and then put it on the server. If that server gets hacked, it doesn't matter because it's encrypted data. You can't break that level of encryption. If an employee at Sync gets fired and is like, oh, I'm going to screw this company over, then it's like they can't do anything with the customer data because they don't have access to it because they can't see it. And so I think in making choices like Google Drive, like you and I are both looking at a Google Drive document as we record this, but this is all information that is going to be public anyways because we're in the process of recording the season. But I'm always thinking about that. Like, could this be used against me or would this be the end of the world if this data got into somebody else's hands? Which is why I favor encrypted things like Proton Mail over Gmail or Fathom, which is my business, but whatever, like Fathom Analytics over like Google Analytics, or not installing Jetpack on WordPress because Jetpack makes a copy of all of the users' email and first and last names on Jetpack servers. If you run a WordPress course on the internet and you use the Jetpack plugin, they're saving every single one of your students' data to their servers. They're not doing anything nefarious with it, but there is a copy of that data out there. That seems just like ripe, not even just singling them out. I just think that the way they do it is crappy. But like, there's a lot of businesses that do that where that data, if something bad happens, then it's mostly the customers because it's their data on the hook rather than the company. I don't know. I go way far down the rabbit hole on this. I'm curious what you think.
Yeah. No, you've had a lot of conversations, especially on Twitter about this. So if people are interested, they should go search out those tweets. I think you make a really good point. And this is something that I don't necessarily think about a whole lot, but it's very true. And it is a risk that you take on for your business anytime you share data or you share even the data of your clients. You know, if you use an invoicing software, like what's the fine print around your clients' data also in the payment processing for if you accept payments online and things like that. I think those are all good things to think about and good things to know because, you know, if something does happen to that information, you're going to have to answer for it essentially if you're involved in that or if it's your own risk. Like you're going to have to take care of that and get a new card or, you know, find a new provider for whatever it might be, depending on the data breach. So it's a good thing to think about. And I think that we're all very comfortable with the level of data collection that's happening on a day-to-day basis from, you know, there's the whole wormhole we could get into with Facebook and listening and social listening and all those things that are happening, even right now. So yeah, we're very comfortable with it.
Like right at this second. Hello, Mark Zuckerberg.
Hello.
Are you listening?
We hear you. Well, yes, we don't hear you. But yeah, I mean, I feel like we've all grown very comfortable with it. And so we don't think about it a whole lot. And there are a lot of ripple effects that happen as a result. So I'm glad that we're having the conversation about privacy, and I hope it encourages other people to think the same way and to kind of look into this part of their business a little bit more, maybe have some more discussions about it. Because, yeah, I mean, everything from the business side of things to what you share on social media. All of these have a major impact on, one, how your business runs, two, your public perception, and three, like basically how you sleep at night. You know, it has a lot of ripple effects.
Yeah, I mean, people get hired and fired from their jobs because of things they say on social media. The same is true for freelancers.
Right.
Like if a client sees something that they aren't going to like, then yeah, you could be on the hook. And one other point that you made about, because you brought up like if client records are like hacked or there's a data breach, like to be GDPR compliant, you have to report data breaches. Mm-hmm. If a provider you use that does invoicing happens, and you'd have to let all your clients know.
Right.
If you get searched at the border and they look through that information, that technically constitutes a data breach.
Ooh.
The world we live in is just so weird now with privacy, which I think is, it's also good because I think that this conversation wasn't happening 5 or 6 years ago, except for nerds like me or people wearing tinfoil hats. So it's nice that this kind of thing is starting to come to the surface and start to be thought about by freelancers, thought about by consumers, and thought about like, if this business gives me access to their service for free, they're a business and they need to make money. So is their revenue model using my data for something that I wouldn't be happy with? No software is free. Mm-hmm. Facebook isn't free. You may not pay for Facebook with money, but you're paying for it with what you share on it and what you give them access to.
Right.
Yeah.
Scary stuff, man.
Scary stuff.
It is. I'm going to go put on my tinfoil hat. But this was a good discussion. Like I said, I feel like this is something we don't talk about a lot, something we don't think a lot about a lot. We're very comfortable with it. So it's a good thing to consider. And I'm glad it's how we kicked this season off.
Nice. Thanks for listening to this episode of the podcast.
If you enjoyed it, please head over to iTunes and leave us a review there.
And be sure to check out our course, The Creative Class.
You can find it at creativeclass.co.
Yes.